Last week, we made the point that Joshua bringing Israel into the promised land was a type. Do you know what I mean when I say that? When I say something is a type? It basically means it's an example or it's a prefiguring of something that is to come later on. And Joshua bringing the nation of Israel into the promised land prefigures your relationship with Jesus Christ and my relationship with Jesus Christ, because what they were doing in crossing the Jordan River into the land was they were coming into that time of taking in or laying hold of the promises of God. Now, what was the promise of God for Israel? It was the land, right? That was the word that had been given to Abraham so many years before. I'm giving you this land to you and your descendants, right? Wherever you set your foot, this is all yours, right? Well, Abraham never really saw the realization of that promise in his lifetime, nor did Isaac his son, nor Jacob his son. But in fact, after 400 years of Israel living in Egypt, and part of that time even in bondage to the Egyptians, finally God set them free, brought them to the promised land. You guys remember what happened. Through unbelief, they couldn't enter in. So they spent another 38 years wandering in the wilderness. We talked last week about what that is a type of. It's about people who are saved, they're Christians, but they're just never really walking in the victory. They're not walking in the victory of God's promises, right? God has given us so many wonderful promises in the Word, and you and I have to lay hold of them. How do we do that? By faith. We do it by faith, right? That's kind of the point of what we've been saying, and we've been saying that what God said to Israel in the extending of these promises to them in that promised land is what he is saying to you and I in our Christian life. And he's basically saying, I've given you these promises, now grab them, lay hold of them, walk them out, and so forth. Let me remind you of the actual wording. In Joshua chapter 1, verse 3, this is just in the previous chapter, what God said to Joshua was, every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you just as I promised Moses. All right? Now, again, that's a great promise because it was a wonderful land. It was, you know, flowing with milk and honey, which is a way of saying full of the blessings and abundance and so forth of the Lord. But remember, people, remember what we also talked about last week. Remember I told you last week that this study here in Joshua has a New Testament parallel, and that is, well, there's a couple of different books, one of which is the book of Ephesians, which tells you and I that our inheritance is what? The United States of America? No. That's not our inheritance. Is our inheritance the Holy Land? Just like, did we take over where the Jews left off? No. The Bible says that our inheritance is in Christ are all of the blessings, all of the spiritual blessings that we've been given. That's your inheritance. It's not land. It's spiritual blessings. But just as God said to Joshua, wherever you set your foot, it's yours. God is saying the same thing about the spiritual blessings that he's given to you and I. But did you notice he said, wherever you set your foot? What does that tell you? What does that tell you about Joshua? It said they had to go in there. They couldn't stay back on the east side of the Jordan and just say, well, there it is, over there, across the river, there's the land God gave us, that's ours. It really isn't if you don't possess it, is it? It's just there. You can see it and you can look at it and you can say, oh, that's pretty. Pretty land. Flowing with milk and honey. Do you know there are a lot of Christians who look at the promises of God just like that from a distance? They see them from a distance, but they never lay hold of them because the way you lay hold of them is by faith. And the same thing that God said to Joshua, wherever you set the sole of your foot, it's yours. God is saying to you and I, I've given you these promises, but you got to walk them out. You got to go for them. You got to take hold of them. People, you don't do it by moral effort or by human strength. You do it by faith, right? By faith, you believe and it's yours. That's where you put the sole of your feet. So just consider the soles of your feet to have a big faith word just printed right on the bottom of the sole of your feet. And now what are you doing? You're walking out the promises of God. You're coming into the land of promise. These are all the things God has given us in His Word. But you don't just admire them from afar. You take them by faith. We must stand on the promises of God, right? Yeah. So let's begin reading here in chapter 2. We've got a great chapter here tonight, and you've got some great stuff that you're going to be thinking about. Hopefully you all got one of those handouts that has all of the things to think about, questions, so forth. But anyway, let's begin. Verse 1, it says, "Then Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim, and he said, go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho, because that was to be the first city/state that they were going to attack. And so they went, and they actually didn't just go up right up to the walls of Jericho. They went inside the city. These guys have guts. They went right inside. But it says they went and they entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab, and they stayed there. Now, you think about this from the standpoint of being a spy. I've never been a spy, but I can, you know, imagine that that's probably a fairly smart move. You know, if you want to go relatively undetected, I mean, I hate to say it that way, but where are people going to go? Where are a couple of guys going to go? You know, they're probably going to, you know, if they don't have any, you know, moral values or whatever, they're just going to go find the local, you know, harlot in the city and stay there. And so they did this, I'm sure, with the intent of trying to just keep a low profile instead of going out in the city square and say, oh, by the way, we're a couple of representatives from Israel, and we're just kind of here to check out, you know, the city here and just kind of, you know, kind of get a good view of how things are going to be coming down. Because, you know, we're going to be seeing it from the other side of the wall here in a few days. So I just kind of wanted to, you know. So they want to keep things on the DL, right? So they go in and they enter the house of this woman who is a harlot. But the city's on high alert. So whatever attempt to keep things, you know, quiet doesn't really work. It says in verse 2 that the king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. And so the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Well, they knew exactly where they were. You can see that. He didn't send a message to the whole town. He went right to Rahab. And he said, bring out the men who came to you and entered your house because they have come to spy out the whole land. Now, listen to this. This is great. But the woman had taken the two men, obviously knowing that they were probably going to come looking for them, and she had hidden them. Then she said, when the soldiers came to the door, yeah, yeah. The men came to me, but I didn't know where they'd come from. You know, not my business to ask a lot of questions. But, you know, at dusk, when it was time to close the city gate, they left. They went on their way. I don't know which way they went. You know, hey, go after them. Maybe you can catch up with them if you're, you know. She's good, isn't she? I mean, she's good. It tells us in verse 6, parenthetically, but she had taken them up to the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax that she had laid out on the roof. And so we're told that the men, obviously the soldiers, set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan, assuming that they were just heading back where they'd, you know, come from. And as soon as the pursuers had gone out, the gate was shut because, of course, they didn't want to have anybody else come in or go out. Now, stop there for just a moment, if you would. This was a huge risk that Rahab was taking here. I mean, you know, the soldiers didn't have to believe her. She sounds like she's a fairly convincing lady, but they didn't have to believe her. And she knew that. They didn't have to believe her. They could have said, yeah, stand aside, we're going to check your house. And the whoever was in charge could have brought in his soldiers and said, check it out everywhere, even go upstairs, wherever, just do a thorough search of the house. We're going to make sure they're not here. Now, what would have happened? Obviously, in a scenario like that, well, they would have brought those men out and executed them. But in addition to that, they would have brought out Rahab, probably in her entire family, and had them executed as well for treason. So This is one of those circumstances, you know, that kind of gets your heart going a little bit, because the potential is there, you know, for something to go wrong related to that. But she did it because she believed that God was working with these Jewish invaders of the land. And she was choosing at that moment to put her life on the line, much as they would, by coming into the land and attacking it. And she decided to risk her life, listen to this, risk her life in keeping with her belief. We'll come back to that whole idea in just a little bit. Verse 8, look with me in the text. It says, before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, listen, I know that the Lord has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. Now, one of the things she's relating to them is something they heard about, which took place 40 years earlier. Okay? So the people are still talking about what had happened in the Red Sea event 40 years later. The thing with Sihon and Og, the other kings across the other side of the Jordan, that just happened. That was just the other day. So that was fresh. But boy, I tell you, when the Lord does a powerful work, and she says, we know all about that stuff. Verse 11, she says, when we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Notice the response of the spies. Our lives for your lives, they said, the men assured her. And listen, if you don't tell what we are doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us the land. So she let them down by a rope through the window, for the house she lived in was actually part of the city wall. She said to them, go to the hill so the pursuers will not find you. In other words, go the opposite way. Hide yourselves there 3 days until they return, and then go your way. Now the men had said to her, this oath you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter the land you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you have brought your father and mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house, if any of them go outside the house into the street, well, their blood be on their own heads. We can't be, you know, we can't help that. We will not be responsible. As for those who are in your house with you, their blood be on our head if a hand is laid on them. But if you tell what we are doing, we will be released from this oath that you made us swear. Agreed, she said. Let it be as you say. So she sent them away and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. Now, I want to just reiterate too that this whole, even the scarlet cord business is an act of faith on her part, from the standpoint that she's trusting, you know, that these guys are going to be faithful, that they're going to be true to their word, and that they're going to spare her when they come and take the city. Verse 22 says that when they left, they went into the hills and stayed there 3 days until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them. And then the two men started back. They went down out of the hills, forded the river, and came to Joshua, son of Nun, and told him everything that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, the Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. All right, let's talk, shall we? Let's talk for a little bit about this woman, Rahab, because she's kind of the star of the show in this chapter, isn't she? Did you know that when we get into the New Testament and we get into that wonderful book called Hebrews, And we get into that magnificent chapter in the wonderful book of Hebrews called the chapter of faith, or the hall of faith, if you will, Hebrews chapter 11. There are only two women from the entire Old Testament who are mentioned in that chapter and heralded for their faith. One of them is Sarah, the wife of Abraham, and the other is Rahab, the harlot. That is pretty amazing. But you might ask the question, why? I mean, okay, there are some people in the Bible who did some pretty amazing things. And I mean, okay, you know, she hid some spies. But why is that so noteworthy that she would get a mention in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11 and actually elsewhere, which we'll talk about? I mean, you know, is it really that big of a deal? Well, do you remember what she said? Let me just condense it. I'll put it on a slide here for you. This is from verses 9 and 11. This is what Rahab said. You ready for this? I know that the Lord has given you this land. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below. That is a pretty amazing statement of faith, is it not? And she said, I know that this is what is going on. I know. That's, you know, think about this, guys. She's raised in a complete, total pagan environment. Listen, please understand this. The city of Jericho, along with the other cities of Canaan, is going to go down. It's under judgment. And it's under judgment for a reason, you guys. It's not just because God decided he wanted to give new people the opportunity to live there. It wasn't like God was just saying, you know, this whole land needs to come under new management because, you know, I made a promise. I'm really sorry about evicting you guys. I mean, you've been good tenants. But I made this promise way back when to this guy named Abraham. You know, he was kind of a lonely kind of a guy wandering around. Didn't really have any place to live. So I said, you know what? I'm going to give this place to you. Listen, that's not what's going on here. God evicted, if you will, and that's a very, very kind word, the people of Canaan because they were under judgment. They had refused to respond over and over. The sins of the Canaanites had reached their full measure, and judgment was going to fall. Okay? Are we clear about that? That's an important thing to remember because Rahab was raised right in the middle of all of that. All of that that was coming under judgment. And all this judgment that has now been building up for all these years is ready to just strike and take down this city as well as many others there in Canaan. I find it very fascinating that God halts the whole thing. He halts the whole judgment, puts it on hold. You know why? There's a soul that needs to be saved. There is a heart of faith in Jericho. And do you know this is God's MO? This is God's MO. He will halt judgment for the sake of one person. You know, he was going to rain down fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah, but he couldn't do it until he got Lot out of the city. He even sent down angels to grab the guy by the hand and drag him out of the place when Lot wouldn't, you know, move his rear end out of there. It's like these angels are telling him, come on, move it. God is going to destroy this place. And Lot is just fiddle-faddling around and whatever. And finally, they grabbed him and said, we're gone. Boom, you know, and so forth. But why? Because God is not going to judge when there is a heart there, when there is a heart of faith that exists there. And there's other biblical examples of that same thing. But what is amazing is how you can have a heart of faith in the midst of such deplorable conditions. And raised, I'm sure, in a total pagan environment still, this woman, Rahab, says, I know that your God is the living God. He is the creator of heaven and earth. And I know that I know that I know he has given this land to you. I know it. Wow. Yeah, that kind of faith God can't ignore. He just can't ignore it. He is a God who delights in mercy. He longs to pour out his heart of mercy, and he hears the heart of this woman in Jericho, and he puts the entire judgment on hold until it can be done. Now let's take a look at that passage from Hebrews chapter 11, if we could. And this is where it says, previous to this, by faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe. This is out of the New King James, when she had received the spies with peace. Well, clearly she was a woman of faith. So much so that she's mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, so much so that God puts the entire campaign on hold until he can secure her safety. And because Rahab, we're gonna read more about this later, because Rahab also exercised faith, and this is important, people, she is going to come into the entire family of God with the Israelites, and she is going to be a recipient of all of the inheritance. Rather than being destroyed with Jericho, she is going to come into the inheritance of the Israelites. Here's the point. You guys know what happens to Rahab. She marries one of the men. In fact, one of the spies. And she has children with him. And those children have children. So that, and this is crazy, this woman raised a pagan who lived in harlotry, I mean lived in this world of prostitution, her name shows up in Matthew chapter 1 in the genealogy of Messiah. Is that grace or what? I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And you know, we can kind of look through, I suppose we can read through Matthew chapter 1 and we can kind of skip down through the names of genealogy and maybe blush when we come to Rahab a little bit. Wow, she was a prostitute. I'm not sure I would have put that in there if I was kind of coming up with my own pedigree. You know what I mean? I'm not sure I would have listed her. I might have just kind of glossed over that one a little bit. Mentioned her husband, Salmon, but not her. And yet, you know, isn't it interesting that God just boldly puts it in there? And Rahab, the prostitute, is right there in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the Messiah. And what does that show to you and I? That instead of causing us to blush with some kind of a perverted sort of a sense of, pride, instead we exult in it and we say, you see how good my God is? Do you see how gracious and merciful he is? And do you see how he responds to the heart of faith and not works? If it were a works-based thing, would a prostitute be in the genealogy of Messiah? Do you know who else is in there? Tamar. Remember, you probably remember Tamar. Daughter-in-law of Judah. You can go back and read it. Anyway, didn't live a stellar life. She's there too. And there are others. It really is pretty crazy. So Rahab ends up marrying this man, Salmon. They end up having children, and she is, you know, and she's the recipient. Instead of being destroyed, she is the recipient of blessings, and the inheritance that is given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob now comes into her and her children because she's a woman of faith, right? Believing God. The action that Rahab took, and that's an important word I want you to think about for just a minute. The action that Rahab took that was produced by her faith even got a mention in the book of James. Rahab, she's all over the Bible. Pretty amazing. He writes, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works?" This is out of the ESV. "Can that faith save him? Well, in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way?" What is he saying? You know, a lot of people read this passage, or read the book of James, frankly, and it messes them up a little bit because they hear about salvation by grace through faith, salvation by grace through faith, salvation by grace through faith. Then they read James and they go, wait a minute, isn't James saying that we're also saved by works? No, he's saying that when you have faith, it will follow that you will have action based upon that faith. That's what he's saying. He's saying, you can say all day long, I have faith, I have faith, I have faith, I have faith. But if you never do anything, if you never walk it out. In other words, if the soles of your feet never walk into the land, then we have to question whether or not that faith you said you had is genuine. You see. That's why we go back to that first passage we looked at from Joshua chapter 1, where God said, wherever the soles of your feet walk, wherever you trod, there it's yours. Remember? So there's this action of walking it out. And James is simply bringing out that Rahab, being a woman of faith, responded in that faith.